You know, one of the fastest growing areas of books is these days, it's kind of that self-helpy, get in touch with your inner, well, depends on the book, your inner whatever you need to get in touch with. It's that kind of book that's one of the most rapidly growing areas. You know, books that talk about what a good person you are and what a nice person you are. And if you browse through them, the message behind those books really is pretty much the same. That we're basically good people that have gotten maybe a little confused, a little lost, and we just kind of need to find our way back to our, what's the word, center. Right? Don't we all need to get back to our center, wherever that is? That's all we need, just a little help. We need to believe in ourselves more, right? Don't you all need to believe in yourselves more? We have all the things we need to lead happy and full lives inside of us. We just need to learn how to find them and use them to our advantage. Now, on the surface, those books sound pretty good. Pretty helpful, and they can be helpful, and they offer encouragement, and they make us feel good about ourselves, and we do need that all the time. I mean, what harm is there in all of that after all, feeling good or offering help or hope? I mean, what can those things hurt? Well, we found ourselves here at the beginning of the 21st century in a world that's gone a little overboard with that idea of self-actualization and believing that we can affect the outcomes in our life by what we choose to project onto the universe, right? You know how it is. You sow good karma, you reap good karma. How easy is that? Project good on the universe, you get showered back with good. We just need a little understanding. I mean, yeah, maybe we've gotten lost, confused, gone a little astray, but with help, a little more hard work, a little more time and effort, and we'll be okay. We'll make it. We just need an attitude readjustment. Well, most of you probably think your kids or spouses are the ones who need the attitude readjustment, right? That your attitude is pretty much okay. A new outlook, a cheerful attitude. Anyone's spouse need a cheerful attitude these days? And everything will be okay. And it applies to our world at large, right? We're not bad people. We don't sin. We just get a little carried away. But if we all try harder and love more and understand more and learn to work together, we'll be okay. And we'll have a world of peace. And we'll live in harmony. And it'll be kind of like those old 70s Coca-Cola commercials, right? Nothing but sunshine and rainbows. Nothing but good news all around. And then Jesus goes and does it. Jesus' words to his disciples this morning certainly rubbed them the wrong way. They made their hair stand on end as they stood there admiring the beauty of the temple. Think of them as like tourists in New York or DC looking at all of the beautiful buildings. They're looking at the beauty of the temple, and Jesus goes and rubs them the wrong way. He didn't go and chat with them and agree with how beautiful the temple was like they wanted. They were making small talk. He says, and he puts a damper on the afternoon by declaring to them that very soon this temple would be destroyed. There would be nothing left but a pile of stones. All of its glory gone, all of its beauty destroyed. Now that doesn't sound like good news to me. I don't know if it sounds like good news to you. And then he continues by spelling out in gory detail a very graphic picture of the future. War and famine and plague and all kinds of terrors. And that was not what they wanted to hear. They were just trying to have a fun afternoon looking at the sights. They wanted soothing words, kind words, words of peace. They wanted to hear words like we usually look for, not straight talk about us and this world, but sugar-coated words that promise peace. Words that are meant to soothe us, not wake us up. You know, good news. Well, that's not what they got. And just like us, we don't always hear from the gospel the words we want to hear, but rather we hear the words we need to hear. So one after another, Jesus spells out for his disciples all of the things that are waiting for them. After the war and plagues, they should expect betrayal, even at the hands of their own friends and family. And when the disciples asked for some warning signs so that they could be ready, Jesus refused. All right, who was a school child in the 60s? Do you remember? We called them duck and cover drills. I don't know what the rest of you called them. Do you remember the duck and cover drills? We lived in the nuclear era, right? We'd go into the hallway, you'd do this, go up against the wall, right, to protect yourself. Why bother? Right? As if huddling under your desk or going into the hallway would make any difference. And it was the same with the apostles. Why do they need a warning sign? It's not going to help them in any way. Now, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of positive to look forward to in signing on to be a disciple of Jesus at this point. He's honest with his disciples about that, though. Nothing but doom and gloom. But in the end, the promise that Jesus makes, and this is important, the promise he makes to them in this passage is that not a single hair on your head will perish. Not one. For by your endurance, you will gain your souls. Let's face it, life is a struggle. It's a constant battle, a battle with sin and despair, and no one is free from that struggle or immune to the suffering. And we will all lose our lives in the end. Every last one of us. The scenario that Jesus paints of the future for the disciples has been a scenario that, as it turns out, has been repeated for each new generation of disciples for the last 2,000 years. He doesn't paint a pretty and flawless picture of how our empowered and wonderful future will be, just like those books give us. The cost of following Jesus is high. He doesn't promise a life that's a cakewalk for any of us. We don't get an offer of cheap grace and false hope. There are plenty of books and teachers out there that will promise us and offer us that. The good news of Jesus Christ lets us know exactly what we are. Sinners. Nothing more and nothing less. How's that for the joy killer on the first Sunday of Advent? We are sinners, nothing more and nothing less. But the good news is an offer of forgiveness and for salvation for all who will come and take and grab hold of it. Free, real peace, real living, real joy. Not like what the world offers, not like what the latest weird, feel-good, mood-lifting nonsense book offers us. Will you accept the mercy and the forgiveness of the one who reassures us with these words? But not a single hair on your head will perish, for by your endurance you will gain your souls. You know, some days finds us with all of the blocks that make up our lives in neat and tidy order and looking good. Any of you have one of those days where every single block is in its place, every single duck is in a row, and things are looking good? Or has it been a little too long since you've had one of those days? Other days, we're not so lucky, right? When your life has or is crumbling to the ground, it's hard to look beyond the disorder of today and dream of a time when life might be beautiful again. And I can't tell you how many people I have taken that walk with in these past few months. As Jesus describes to his disciples what the future looks like, it's frightening. And I'm sure they were frightened by his words as much as we are. I'm sure that they were as frightened of the prospect of their lives being dismantled as much as we are when our carefully constructed lives come apart. As all that we take for granted as being solid rock beneath our feet suddenly starts shifting and changing, as our relationships or our health or our livelihood are shaken and unsteady and sometimes falls to the ground. These words of Jesus would be devastating to us except for one thing. And that's in verse 7 when he says, "Do not be afraid." That's the message of the angels in Scripture over and over again. Do not be afraid. And that's what Jesus says here. That's the one verse that makes all the difference in the world to us. Do not be afraid. You see, when God chooses to dismantle everything that we hold dear, everything temporary that we've put our hope in and our trust in, it's unsettling. No one likes to have their lives messed with. No one likes to have what they cherish most disturbed or called into question. All of those big, beautiful rocks, like we're used to make that temple, that we use to make our lives. And Jesus tells us, do not be afraid. You see, sometimes God needs to dismantle the way things are, the way we are, in order to make room for the new, in order to make room for new things to emerge in our lives. Sometimes God needs to help us see that we've strayed too far from home. Sometimes God needs to help us see that the things we're building our lives on are not as strong and secure as we think they are. Sometimes God needs to shake things up in our life to help us see where we've begun to stop leaning on God's mercy and grace and sought those things in the wrong places. Sometimes God needs to shake us out of the dullness of our routine. And when God chooses to shake our lives, then there is no doubt that God will leave us better off than when we started. If there's one thing that's certain in life, it is that, as Jesus says, the days are coming. The days of change and new things and different ways and sometimes unpleasant things are surely coming. That's a fact of life. The days are coming when our lives will not be as we expected them to be or hoped that they would be. The days when our well-constructed lives seem to be anything but well-constructed. The days when the beautiful buildings we've made for ourselves are all thrown down. The days when it's hard to be a disciple of Christ and near impossible to hold on to his promises. Those are the days that we need to not wander off looking for peace and comfort in other places, but to remember the words of the one who promises us in the midst of war and earthquake and fire, and most especially in the midst of the broken and fallen places of our lives. The one who reminds us that not a single hair on your head will perish, but by your endurance you will gain your souls. Today we begin another season of Advent. Yes, Christmas is right around the corner, less than a month shopping, folks, if you haven't gotten to it yet. And what has that got to do with this passage from Luke anyway? I mean, shouldn't we be talking about angels and shepherds and stars and Mary and John the Baptist and all of that good and happy and wonderful stuff? Well, yes and no. Advent reminds us not so much of Jesus' birth as it reminds us that Jesus will return again. And Jesus' return is both a time of great joy and a time of judgment and trial. And nobody likes to hear those words. Advent reminds us that those days are most surely coming. And yet Advent reminds us that the one who is coming again to judge us, the quick and the dead, is the same Jesus who so lovingly gave himself for us. And that is reassuring indeed. So from where I stand this morning, your hair is looking mighty good. Amen.